Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Malcolm Prince. He was Paul O'Grady's radio producer at the BBC for 20 years. At Radio 2, he was the launch producer of Elaine Page on Sunday, Alan Carr and Melanie Sykes' Saturday Escape, and he produced Graham Norton's Saturday Morning programme for a decade. His new book, Paul O'Grady, Not the Same Without You, looks back at the man, the magic and the friendship. Welcome to the show, Malcolm.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And may I start by just saying I'm so sorry for your loss. It must be still really hard and weird for you.
It is strange because although Paul died in March 23, it still affects you. Listen, I worked with him and he was a pal. I wasn't family. So I always think, people say, well, you must be very upset about Paul dying. And of course I am. But his family had it so much worse.
Yeah. And how did you come to meet him and start working with him?
Well, that's a funny story. And I mean, pun intended, it was almost a blind date courtesy of Miss Cilla Black. Bear with me. So I was doing a documentary about Cilla for her 40th anniversary in show business. And I'd interviewed almost everybody I could think of. And then I interviewed Cilla at her home in Spain. And in those days, Radio 2 always wanted a big star to present the programmes. Because as you know, in this business, the producer does all the interviews, but you need somebody else to actually present it on air. And I was saying to Cilla, I don't know who to get. And she said, well, why don't you ask Paul O'Grady? And it was Cilla who brought us together.
Oh, how lovely. And a very sad coincidence where dear Cilla died is just down the road from where I am now, her holiday home, our studios, just up the road.
Oh, well, I mean, I have very happy memories of spending 2 days there at her home, which was called Casa Roll. And it was a pun by her boys. They called the house Casa Roll. I thought that was hysterical. but I have very happy memories of spending time with Cilla, as did Paul. You know, it just wasn't a showbiz friendship. It was a genuine friendship. Paul and Cilla were pals, real pals. And, you know, this book that I've written is all about friendship. I spoke to Vera, who is probably one of the oldest friends that Paul ever had, you know, from teenage right up until the day that Paul died, Vera was there. And I just wanted to write about the people who really knew him. And I set out to write a book about my best friend. And by the end of it, I realized actually I was writing about everybody's friend, because I think everybody who met Paul felt they really knew him. And he had this great ability. If he popped into a supermarket and you met him and you said, oh, can I have a selfie and all of that sort of thing, he spoke to you And for those few seconds or minutes, you felt like you really knew him. It was a genuine skill he had. And that's why he was so good as a chat show host. Yeah. And it was why he was so good on the radio, because he knew there's only one person listening. And they're only half listening. That's what Terry Wogan used to say. There's only one person listening and they're only half listening. And it's you at home. It's you in the car. It's just a very intimate relationship. And that's why Paul really valued radio. He knew how to talk to his listener, his loyal listener. Yeah. Real skill, as you know.
Well, it's lovely to hear that he was as genuine and as lovely as he came across on the radio and on the television on his chat show. You know, it's very easy to hear people on the radio or see people on screen and think, oh, they seem really nice. I hope they're like that in real life. And sometimes they're not. So it's really lovely to know that he was.
I'm not mentioning names, but they're not all as nice as they seem. But Paul was genuine. He was decent. The Paul O'Grady that you saw down at Battersea being weed on by all those puppies. and the Paul O'Grady that you heard on Radio 2 or on Boom Radio, the last radio that he did, that was really what Paul was like. You know, there wasn't an act. It wasn't. He gave up the act when he retired Lily Savage 20 odd years ago. So that's when I started working with Paul. It was when Lily had hung up her wig and retired to running a convent for young ladies in Amsterdam, something like that. The story used to change quite a bit, but you get my drift.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Paul didn't, Graham Norton said to me when I was interviewing him for the book, he said, you know, Paul O'Grady was really Lily Savage without the lipstick. And there's an element of truth to that. But, you know, Paul didn't need to be on. He didn't need to act. That what you saw is what you got. And Paul was decent and genuine. But he wasn't a saint. And I've got to say this, he wasn't a saint. And if you read the book, what I was trying to get across were things about Paul that you wouldn't necessarily know. I didn't set out to just rehash his own autobiographies, which are brilliant. And if you haven't read them, I urge you to read those books because they're so funny. But they stopped 20 years before he died. So what I tried to do with this was to continue his story. And the sadness is I actually ended that story as well. So I was with him on his last day. And I left him down the road because we lived, 15, 20 minutes away from each other. And I was really lucky. Actually, I'm holding on to that. I was really lucky because I spent time with him on the last day. But more importantly, we got to say goodbye. And nobody else got to say goodbye. He wasn't a touchy-feely person. He didn't like public displays of affection. Grumpy old git. And but on that last day, he walked me to the door and he gave me a hug and a kiss on the cheek and said, talk to you tomorrow, because we were going to do a radio show the next day. And he gave me a hug and we said goodbye. So I'm really lucky. So when I interviewed, I think it was over 30 people for the book, what I wanted to give those people was the chance to say thank you to Paul and farewell, my friend. And I think I've done that. I hope I've done that. And most importantly, I hope I've done him proud.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And him hugging you there on that last day, which is obviously something he didn't normally do, as you say, do you think he there was something in him that maybe knew?
You know, I don't want to sound flippant, but I'll say, I've thought about that a lot.
Yeah.
When I got there in the afternoon in his lovely kitchen, and his house in Kent was... It was on Knoll Hill, views down the Romney Marshes and out to sea. And it's a beautiful house. And we used to sit in the kitchen and natter and normally moan about the BBC, if I'm being honest. But anyway, we used to natter and we used to gossip. He was a really good gossip. But the first thing that we spoke about on that last day was death. And I sort of think... Did he know? I mean, he said to me on a number of occasions, Malcolm, I won't make old bones. And he'd had a rough 6 months leading up to that. You know, he'd been in hospital and that was kept out of the papers. And, you know, who knows? Who knows? Yeah. All we know is that he's no longer with us. And, you know, that's why I called the book Not the Same Without You, because life really isn't, not just for me, not just for his friends, not just for his family, but for all of us who ever watched or listened to him, not the same without Paul O'Grady. I mean, that running commentary, I can hear him now on the news, the day's news. I mean, can you imagine what he'd be thinking now about what's going on with, let's just say, the headlines today? He'd have an opinion.
Yes,
and right. I used to sit on the other side of the glass when we were in the studio and get paid to laugh, because I loved it when he had a rant. Oh my Lord, he'd rant away about all sorts of things, and I just sit there chuckling away and then think, oh crikey, we've got to do a radio show. Can you get back to the running order, please?
Oh,
how lucky
brilliant.
Was I?
Oh,
you
know, very lucky. He was great at a rant. And I think even if you maybe didn't agree or didn't have the same opinion, you'd either change your opinion because he was so convincing, or you'd just kind of go, well, no, fair play, he's got a point.
And the other thing that was really refreshing, I mean, you must talk to celebs all the time, right? Most of them won't be honest with you. They'll sell whatever they're selling,
yeah,
or they'll promote whatever they're promoting. But if you said to them, what do you think about, I don't know, the American president, they won't say really what they're thinking. Paul O'Grady did. I mean, one of the things I adored about him was he'd say to me, I'm going down to do some red carpet thing. And I'd be thinking, oh yeah, good luck with that, to the journalists who talk to him. And the next day there'd be a headline in the paper. And yes, he had promoted the new series of For the Love of Dogs on ITV on whatever day it was, starting next week at 8:30. He did do that. He always honoured what he had to do. But then they'd say something else to him and he'd give a frank answer. And that frank answer got headlines in the papers the next day. He was very clever. I'm not saying he manipulated the press, because I don't think he thought about it in that way. But whatever he said about certain politicians meant that he did get front page. And of course, so did his TV series or his new panto or his new book by default. He was a genius in that way.
Yeah, very clever. And I think people appreciate honesty,
yes,
with celebrities,
so,
people in the public eye, because it's so easy to get that Instagram view of people and think that these celebrities, yeah, have got it all figured out and have these perfect lives. And we all know that's not true. So
Paul certainly didn't have a perfect life. The stories he had, the problems with his house. He always believed that the borrowers did live under the floorboards. We all knew they were actually rats, because he lived in deepest, darkest Kent. He'd say to me, because he had all these animals who lived with him, not within the house, but in the garden. He had alpacas and pigs and sheep, chickens, owls. He had a duck pond. It was really beautiful. But he'd moan about it, he'd say, well, I've got to be up at 5 feeding them, and I'd have to go out in the morning. And he says, pig nuts cost a fortune, Malcolm. And, you know, just, yes, Paul, okay. Or say, oh, we had a power cut last night. Oh, gosh, Paul, really? So he'd moan about all sorts of things. He was a real character. I've never met anybody like him, and I don't think I'll ever meet anyone like him ever again.
Oh, and I'm interested to hear what Vera had to say, his lifelong friend, because I wonder how much, you know, knowing him for years before he was famous and in the public eye, and then seeing him, you know, become really famous. What did she have to say about what he was like before all of that?
So that's the funny thing. And I'm really pleased you said she, because Vera, of course, was a man.
Oh, sorry.
Is a man. No, why? No. So hold on. Right at the beginning of the radio show, here's a great example. Right at the beginning, and we did 546 programs of Team Pog on a Sunday afternoon. And at the beginning, Paul would be in the studio. I'm on the other side of the glass. And he'd be saying, well, I come from a quaint little fishing village. And I'd be sat there on the other side of the glass going, you what? I thought you were born in Birkenhead near Liverpool. And he'd be described, and you would just fall for these stories, because he wasn't a great comedian. He said he wasn't a comedian. He was a storyteller. He didn't actually like comedy, by the way. He presented a radio show in 96 and said, I'm not a fan of comedy. So that's really interesting. So he's a storyteller. So over the course of the programmes, he'd be talking about Vera. And I'd be thinking, who's Vera? And I eventually met Vera, and Vera was his mate from Liverpool. They used to go out drinking together, going out clubbing it like we all did. You know, we all had a best friend and we'd go out and do that. But Vera is a man. And Vera called Paul Lil. Most of his friends called him Savage. I called him Mr. O'Grady. No, I didn't. And what was fascinating talking to Vera, to answer your question, forgive me, I always go off on a tangent, but I bring it back eventually. You'll be pleased to know that Savage hadn't changed. Yes, he was successful. Yes, he had a nice house in the country. Yes, he had all these animals. Yes, he could travel in business class on a plane if he had to. But deep down, Paul O'Grady was the same person. And Vera knew him from beginning to end. And all his friends would say that to you. They'd say he wasn't a saint, as I said earlier. But you could ring him up, or normally he would ring you, and you'd be on the phone for an hour having a natter about things, just like anybody does with their best friend. And I think it's a real testament to Paul O'Grady that all the people who I asked to take part in this project, in this book, they all said yes. And they were genuine friends. They're not show business friends. They're genuine friends. So when Cilla passed, Paul was really upset. And we were supposed to be doing a radio show on the day her death was announced. And thank goodness that day's show had been recorded. And a week later, we did the program and he paid tribute to her. And we played Alfie. What's it all about, Alfie? Mm. And he broke down, as any real friend would. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, Malcolm, I can't carry on. You know, so he, going back to what we were just saying earlier, he was a decent person and a genuine person.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vera adored him. And I spoke to Joan, who managed him somehow for years, and Moira, who looked after him in the house. And I tell you, the really key thing here is, 2.5 years later, have you ever read in the paper a bad story about him?
No.
Because I have. A lot of famous people, when they die, there are, you know, tributes. And then a few weeks later, you start hearing rumblings. There's nothing about Paul O'Grady like that. Yeah. All the things he got up to as a young man are in his own books. And there isn't much else that can top those stories, trust me. He was a wonderful friend, and I count my blessings. I mean, I'm like you. I was on the other side of a microphone, and really my job was to make programs happen, not to present them. And I'm only doing this, and I know this, by the way, because he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
So it's a bittersweet achievement. It's thrilling to go into a bookshop and see the book on the shelf. Of course it is. And that's very, very exciting. But about a month ago, I was invited down to the printers to see the book being printed, which was fascinating, by the way. And the gentleman who was showing me around said, oh, this is a good place, Malcolm, where if you take the book off the machine, someone can take a picture of you. It'll look really good. And I said, oh, okay. And I picked the book up, and then I suddenly got quite emotional. And I thought, well, I must ring Paul and... The one person you want to ring and say, you'll never guess what's happening, Paul. I was on the telly last week talking to Lorraine Kelly, or I'm doing this. It's Paul O'Grady, because he'd be chuffed to bits for me. I know he would.
Absolutely.
That's the sort of guy he was.
Yeah, that's really sad. I can relate to that. And talking about good stories, one of my colleagues, Julie, messaged me saying she's literally just finished the audio version of your book.
She said
it's truly wonderful. Be prepared for tears and laughter. And she said I must ask you about the Skippy Kangaroo story. Please tell.
I mean... Do you know, I've, as I say, he was a storyteller. I can't match the way he told these stories. But when he was touring Australia with Bob Down, they went to see, it was an animal park. And if O'Grady was telling you this, you'd get all the colour of this story, so forgive me. But he went, he saw this kangaroo and he went up to the kangaroo and he said, excuse me, didn't you used to be Skippy? Didn't you used to be big? And Skippy turned to Paul and said, I am big. It's the bush that got smaller. forgive me, Paul O'Grady, you would do it so much better.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's great. I love it. You did a great job. Well done, Malcolm.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah. I love doing that audiobook, by the way. I mean, that was, I was in the studio for 3.5 days, but talking for 9 hours and now it's edited. I did say right at the beginning, if you think I'm going to try and do his accent, you know, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to try and mimic Paul O'Grady. There's only one Paul O'Grady.
Yes, fair enough.
What fun that was.
Oh, nice. And it's so lovely seeing all the quotes that people have given you for the book,
saying how
wonderful it is. Graham Norton, Alan Carr, Julian Clary, Joe Brand. I mean, the list goes on. It's really nice.
Very lucky. Very lucky.
And
of course, his daughter.
I was going to say, his daughter Sharon saying, I can hear my dad on every page. How beautiful.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I've been very lucky to get Sharon to take part. And I interviewed Paul's grandchildren. Mm. That was the first interview they'd done. And then Sharon wrote the afterword for me as well. So to have her blessing was really important for me.
Yeah.
And I think I learned a lot about Paul O'Grady because of talking to her.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't kind of know or understand your role as a producer with Paul O'Grady and all the other people I mentioned, Graham Norton, what does that mean? What does that entail?
Well, I mean, a radio producer, it depends on what show you're doing. The job does differ. But generally, I would pick the music. I would construct the running order. In the case of Graham, I would book the guests, prepare the guest notes. And it just making sure that the program and the features, you know, come up with the features and that sort of thing, just making sure that the program was what the BBC wanted. Until the end, who knew what they wanted at the end? But I won't. Don't get me on that. Please don't get me on that. It's in the book. There's a whole chapter devoted on the end of Team Pog, to the end of Team Pog. But coming up with working with these big people, they often didn't have a lot of time, and you only had them for maybe half an hour before we went on air and 15 minutes after. So you had to make sure that when the red light went on in the studio, that program was ready to go. So I generally, with Alan Carr, with Graham Norton, and with Paul O'Grady, got paid to sit and laugh. And I know I was lucky. And those were the golden days of radio.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing job to have. And, you know, you're so important with that role, and I think it's nice for listeners to understand the importance of that role, because I mean, I know they get you involved sometimes and refer to you and things like that, which is brilliant, but a lot of people will just think about the presenter when it comes to the show.
Yes.
And it's really nice for people to understand that the show wouldn't happen without people like you.
It's less so with radio compared to television, but you know, there's a huge team behind these programs. And I was lucky. Don't get me wrong. All the presenters acknowledged me and thanked me. So when I worked with Elaine Page, you know, Malcolm's Big One, which was the name of the last record in the show before you think there was anything else going on there. you know, I was part of that program. And with Paul, I didn't speak with Paul originally, but something went wrong with the mechanism that allowed me to talk to him in his headphones, the talkback unit. And suddenly I was on air and he said, oh, listener, Malcolm speaks. And that's the day the radio show changed. And, you know, during COVID, when we couldn't do it in the studio and he was in Kent and I was in Kent and we were doing it remotely, as it were, much like you and I are today, I was able to take part in that show a bit more because actually I had to, otherwise he wouldn't know what was coming next because we couldn't see each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was very lucky to be part of Team Pog, and that's why it was Team Pog, you know, because we were a team.
Yeah.
And I count my blessings. I really do. Great fun.
Yeah. Well, it was great fun to listen to as well.
Thank you.
If people want to get a copy of your book, Paul O'Grady, Not the Same Without You, The Man, The Magic, The Friendship, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Malcolm Prince, who we've been chatting with today. Malcolm, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. And thank you for letting me just rattle on. I'm so grateful.
Oh,
I could talk about him forever.
Oh, it's nice. I could listen to you talking about him forever. It's all good. Thanks,
pleasure.
Malcolm. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.